And to go forward.
But to go forward, you can press the left,
okay,
or you can go down.
Okay. My name is Sharon Humiston. I'm a pediatrician at University of Rochester in Rochester, New York. I was formerly an employee of CDC. I continue to have research grants from CDC. Since leaving my position at CDC, I now talk about ACIP recommendations in a host of settings, and those settings are funded by a host of vaccine manufacturers. I have other, I have another conflict of interest, if you will, in the sense that I have a 15-year-old. I knew I couldn't make it through this talk without choking up. I have a 15-year-old severely autistic son. At 15, he has no language. And so I am in an unusual position. I also am in an unusual position because my clinical work is in pediatric emergency medicine. This is basically the story of my years in pediatric emergency medicine. From a time when I saw myself, children come in with epiglottitis from hip disease, including this baby. And unfortunately, the least professional of the speakers today. So I have the unusual position to have been on every aspect of this debate. So I want to begin with, what is autism? Because that word is bandied about in a way that now it's really confusing when people are talking about autism. What exactly are they talking about? Autism is a collection of disorders from three abnormal areas: social skills, communication, and obsessive traits. It is like saying, so when we talk about what causes autism, it's like talking about what causes mental retardation. It's a constellation of clinical signs and symptoms, but it is currently impossible to say one thing or one single part of the brain. Autism spectrum disorder ranges from autism. My son would fall into that category because of the absence of language and a shocking lack of social skill, including pulling his pants down on the way to the bathroom. And it goes to Asperger's syndrome, like my brother's son has, where my brother's son has words and is able to learn new words, but still has obsessive behavior, abnormal speech, and odd communication skills, all the way down to PDD, pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified, which is a gamish of children. So one of the issues that I see is that when I say I have an autistic son, and another woman says she has an autistic son, those children can look very, very different. And over throughout my talk, I will reemphasize to you that I think one of the most important things we need to do is have better epidemiology, better parsing out what's what and who's who. Is autism spectrum disorder on the rise? We don't even know the answer to this question. It has, as the categorization autism has risen, other categorizations have decreased. So, for example, in California, there is less mental retardation now than there used to be, but more autism now. So that's an example of, is there actually a change, or is it a categorization issue? Part of that is because of changing criteria and because there is earlier diagnosis. What causes autism? Certainly, there is a genetic component. You already heard me talk about not only my own son is affected, but my brother's son is affected on the spectrum. There are identical twin studies that show that more than 90% of, but not 100%, more than 90% of identical twins are similarly affected. So if one twin is in the autism spectrum disorder range, the other one is too. There is also an increase in sibling. If one sibling is affected, your chance of having a second affected sibling is about 5%. This certainly has ramifications for my daughter, who is a 17-year-old female, thinking, you know, when she is 10 years down the line from now, that she would never have children of her own because she's so afraid that she carries some gene that would be passed then to her children. There seems to be some connection with a gene on the X chromosome because boys with fragile X syndrome have an increased likelihood of autism. There is new data on microdeletion and microduplication of this 593 Kb on chromosome 6E. And one of the things that I want to point out immediately, as soon as I start saying that, I'm not a geneticist. I don't know if there are any geneticists in the audience, but that information doesn't play well on Oprah. So that even though University of Rochester identified on the HOXA gene that is associated with autism, these folks have that kind of information is very hard to get across to a general audience. And another thing that's difficult to explain is that there is no one single genetic change that explains more than 2% of autism. So again, we're back to, this is a condition that seems to include a lot of different parts of the genome. The bad news of that is that it is unlikely that we are going to have a complete answer before my daughter has her babies or doesn't have her babies. There is a brain cell communication gene that, again, newly located. There's another interesting thing, like with Down syndrome, mothers who were 35 and older were more likely to be affected. With autism, it's fathers who are 40 and over that are more likely to be affected. One question is that, you'll see this on a later slide, there might be actually an increase in folic acid in the sperm of older men that basically is toxic, interestingly. There are also certain psychiatric diagnoses in parents that increase the rate of autism. So affective disorder increases, a parent with affective disorder is at 3 times likelihood of having a child on the autism spectrum disorder range. A person with a schizophrenic psychosis is 3.5 times more likely. So again, it seems like there's some genetic components. Oops, wrong way. All right, so that was genetics. There are also prenatal insults that occur at 20 to 24 days gestation that are associated with autism. So the ingestion of thalidomide during that target period of gestation raises your risk of autism. Natural congenital rubella, again, during that period, but not later in pregnancy. So there's something developing in the neurologic system at 20 to 24 days. Of course, I have been over and over in my mind, what was I doing at 20 to 24 days gestation? Other possibilities, we talked about high folic acid. Gestational age less than 35 weeks, but not low gestational weight. So there's a whole range of things and trying to figure out how they hold together. Also, interestingly, I had always believed that higher income parents were more likely to be affected. That is not true. The 40-year-old father, it evens that out. Autism is usually something a child is born with. I say this because there are abnormal brain growth. It's been shown that the brain of a newborn autistic child is different. Again, in some studies, abnormal brain proteins as newborns have been identified, and home studies have been done looking at home videos that were taken of even the 2-month time that a child is that specialists can identify differences in behavior as early as 2 months on videos. Interestingly, Jenny McCarthy, who says that the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine caused her child's autism, also says that at 5 months of age, her child already had developmental delays. And so it's a funny dichotomy there between saying that the vaccine caused the developmental delays and that she herself recognized them as early as 5 months. There may be a small subset of children with late onset autism, and this is hotly debated in the literature. So, 4 basic ideas of how it seems very often that the question is what causes autism, and the answer is vaccines, but there is a group of people who the answer is vaccines. Now, what aspect of vaccines? That's what we need to figure out. And so, basically, there have been 4 hypotheses. The first one is that measles, mumps, rubella vaccine causes autism. In 2004, the Institute of Medicine reviewed 14 available studies, 12 of which were negative. You see the distribution. Some of these controlled observational studies were humongous. 450,000 Danish children, where they could look at the children vaccinated with MMR and those who weren't, found no difference in the rate of autism in the 2 groups. So this, I thought about, parsing this out for you more, but I'll definitely run out of time and the hazmat buzzer will go off. There were 2 positive studies, both by a team of Geyer and Geyer. The work of Geyer and Geyer is difficult to understand. There are many aspects of their data that are not transparent. The other thing is that it's worrisome that Geyer and Geyer uses an IRB that includes themselves and a litigious mother. So it's... their studies that was one of the things that has come out recently that I found shocking and worrisome. The Institute of Medicine said the evidence favors rejection of a causal relationship. That was in 2004. Since then, there have been more studies and 2 important lab studies most recently that showed no evidence of measles virus persistence in peripheral blood mononuclear cells in children with autism spectrum disorder. There it went. Everybody hide. this thing about persistence of the virus was the original way that it was supposed, like that was the original theory of how the mechanism that originally made it biologically plausible. That has now been disproven. So the second theory, that it was the thimerosal formerly in vaccines that caused autism. Again, in 2004, Institute of Medicine reviewed this, found 5 negative studies. Again, positive studies, only one by Geyer and Geyer, and found evidence favors rejection of causal relationship. Most recently, studies, I'm proud to say, at University of Rochester, showed that the elimination of thimerosal from the blood and tissue of infants, thimerosal, you remember, is ethyl mercury, is different than that of oral methyl mercury. And so, to my way of thinking, this study is strong evidence that it's not the persistence of thimerosal in the tissues of the children. California has shown autism rates continue to increase despite the removal of thimerosal by law in the state of California. That was replicated in Denmark and Quebec. So one of the things that is most worrisome as a mom is that people tried to get me at one point to chelate my son, to use a chelation, a chemical that takes mercury and other metals out of the body. In 2005, a 5-year-old boy receiving chelation died in the United States. Okay, the third theory, does the immune system overload? And so that just the number of antigens in the vaccines just simply overloads the child and causes autism. A wide range of immunological abnormalities have been associated with autism. And you'll see on this slide that some of them are increased cell-mediated immunity, some are decreased cell-mediated, like that it's not one consistent finding throughout all children. There has also, at the laboratory level, been no evidence of immune activation or inflammatory lesions in the brains or CSF of autistic children. Here you see, every one of us has shown you the slide of increasing number of vaccines over time. This one is here to show you the number of antigens or immunologically important aspects of the vaccines over time. So this shows you that while the number of vaccines has increased, as shown by previous speakers, the number of antigens or immunologically important particles within those vaccines has actually plummeted. So children today are seeing, if you will, less antigens from vaccines than previously. This is from an article in Pediatrics by Paul Offit. I keep doing this wrong. The fourth theory and the newest theory is that mitochondrial disorders a child with a mitochondrial disorder who is exposed to vaccination could tip over into autism. This is a very confusing theory at this time because mitochondrial disorders are very rare. We believe that autism is not very rare. Vaccines are actually recommended by mitochondrial disorder societies because the diseases themselves that they protect against would be the same kind of overwhelming event causing fever and so forth that could tip the child over. So you are damned if you don't, but you are certainly damned if you do. Do you see what I'm saying? That can you say that the vaccine caused the regression if any viral illness would also have caused the regression? Argument that has come up is that we should test all children for mitochondrial disorders before giving them vaccines. Unfortunately, this is not a blood test like PKU or sickle cell, that this requires a muscle biopsy. I think few mothers would be willing to let their child have a muscle biopsy for a rare disorder. My predictions are there are yet more theories that will arise about autism and vaccines. We have not seen the end of this. And that we will not hear the end of this until we have the bottom line final answer, which, again, I'm afraid is not in the near future. And that when we have the final answer, more people will need to understand genetics in a way that they don't currently, to make that answer palpable on Oprah. Doubt will lead, unfortunately, to more deferred vaccination and consequent emergency department visits. This is not about vaccines. This is from another article I got about how litigators create doubt. They get distressed parents together with a public willing to misunderstand science, a press willing to misrepresent science, and scientists who are unwilling or unable to defend science. And the litigator's hope is to create doubt. Although this slide was not taken from anything to do with vaccines, it certainly seems relevant. What every parent needs, knowledge, waiting, to know that waiting to vaccinate, as that mother of the child with HIB meningitis did, is a conscious choice to stay vulnerable to disease, and a little epidemiology, in the sense that when you hear on the news that 95% of kids with autism received MMR, and only 5% of kids with autism did not receive MMR, you need to fill in those other two boxes that we learned about in Epi 101. And the other thing that parents need is answers. Answers about what causes autism. Sorry. A few great tools. This is a tool that I recently became familiar with. It is by Paul Offit, who's who runs the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital Philadelphia. It is a remarkable book, not only because it clearly spells out the science of autism, but because it goes into great detail about the whole history behind the vaccine scare, if you will. For those folks who want non-governmental immunization websites, I have included a few here. They include Immunization Action Coalition, Vaccine Education Center at CHOP. You can see the rest. The CDC, National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, not only has a website, it also has an email center where people can send their email questions and a phone line. There's the Pink Book, which is a compendium of information. It's free online. Soon, the Vaccine Handbook will come out. That is for more high-end healthcare providers and public health people who have a lot of interest in vaccines. That goes into a lot of detail, and that should be out this year. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Our time is up. I believe that Sharon and the other speakers will be able to stay and answer questions for a while, but I think we need to release the rest of you. And please come back at 2:30 to hear about global immunization issues. I'd like to thank our speakers for doing a terrific job, and I'd like to thank you for coming.
Screen?
Oh, yes.
How did you do that?
Oh,
no resources.
when it's in presentation mode.
Oh, great.
And it goes black.
Okay.
And you need to get it back. If you press W, it goes white.
Fantastic.
Press W, it goes black.
Oh, that is
but
great.
Only in presentation mode.
Only in presentation mode.
You won't do it in any other.
Generic ones.